You're listening to the Option Alpha podcast from OptionAlpha.com, where we show you how to make smarter trades, learn how the stock market really works, and generate consistent monthly income. Now, your host and head trader at OptionAlpha.com, Kirk Duplessis.
Hey everyone, this is Kirk here again from OptionAlpha.com, working every single day to make this the most popular investing podcast offered online because it's based on one thing and one thing only, and that's helping you guys make smarter trades. So again, thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. And before we even get started on episode number 139, I just want to remind you to go back and listen to episode number 138 if you have not. It was definitely one of our most popular episodes. I think our downloads were about 150% of what they usually are for an episode. So we had a lot more people. I mean, we really kind of pushed it hard because I think it was really a game-changing episode for a lot of people. So again, if you haven't listened to episode number 138, talking about the expected probability paradox, please go back and listen to that. Now, today's show, I think, is going to be an important show because of the logic that I'm going to outline here in just the first couple of minutes. And as we kind of go through this, I think it gets to a lot of the topics that we, you know, kind of dance around really in show number 138, which is the previous show, but it really hones in on some of this logical thought process that you have to follow. I mean, it's just some of these things that you, if you agree with one statement, you have to agree with the next statement. I think you'll find that there's a lot of not so obvious ways to avoid blowing up your account. And I say that because many people look at the obvious things, but they don't look at the not so obvious things, or what we might actually think of as very obvious. I guess some people don't think are very obvious points. So we're going to go through these four ways that you basically, if you do these, you have a really hard chance. It's almost an impossible chance of blowing up your account, especially when you're trading options. And I think the problem that I see a lot is that options trading gets a really bad rap in this industry and the investing community in general, and maybe not so much nowadays as maybe it was 5 years ago or even, you know, 10 years ago when I started doing this. But a lot of people look at options trading as this like really evil thing, right? Where we're highly leveraged and we're a bunch of rodeo cowboys and we're just throwing money back and forth. But when you use a very defined, very conservative system, it becomes way more conservative and a lot less volatile than trading stocks. I think stocks is crazy anymore. I don't know why people still do it, but they do. And so we're trying to get more people on our boat, basically. We're trying to get more people on our bus to join the options trading kind of revolution that we're going through. So I want to start off today's show by, like I said, just going through a logical sequence. And what I want to do here is just try to challenge your opinion to some degree on what you think success might mean for a trading strategy and what things you might have to do. And this really all starts with maybe a very simple example of, you know, a logic sequence that you can't argue with. And so if I told you, or if I asked you, I said, what's the probability that the sun comes up tomorrow? So every night the sun goes down wherever you live, but what's the probability that the sun comes up? And if I said the probability that the sun comes up is 100%, nobody would disagree with me, because as far as we know, as far as our entire human history has been able to prove, there's never been a time where the sun did not come up for humans, right? Every day the sun comes up and, you know, circles back around, or we circle around the sun. So that logic sequence cannot be rationalized any other way. It either is something or it's not something. And so that's the type of thing that I want to follow now, is this logic sequence as we go through trading. So the first question I'm going to ask you is do you agree that we cannot make only one trade and be successful? So again, do you agree that we cannot make only one trade and be successful? Now, if you don't agree with that, you would say, yes, I think that we could make one trade and be successful. That means one single instance, one single investment in our entire life and be 100% successful. And that one investment, we capture all the returns that we possibly need to make to sustain our living and provide retirement and provide income for our family. So if you don't agree with my statement, then what you're saying is you think that there is an opportunity to make one single investment, one trade, one time at one opportunity and sustain us for life. The answer here is probably no. You don't, like, you agree that you can't make one trade and one trade is going to be the end all be all, right? So if I said, do you agree we cannot make one trade and only one trade? Yes, you probably agree to that. So if you agree to that, then the next logical question is, okay, if you agree to this, then you might agree that two trades won't work either. So the next sequence is, okay, let's start bumping this up. So if we agree with each other that it's never going to take one possible investment or trade to make all the potential money that we need to make, generate enough income, all returns that we need to make over the course of our life, then we'll probably agree that it's not two trades either. Because if it's not one, it probably won't be two, right? It's not logical that two trades would make a huge difference in our outcome. So if we invest in two things ever, one time, you know, investing in this and one time investing in that, that would not dramatically skew our outcome or our performance. All right, so I think we're in agreement there as well, right? So one trade is not going to do it. Two trades are not going to do it. So if you agree with both of those statements, which I think 99.9% of people who are listening to this would probably agree to it right now, then you'll also have to agree to the following one, which is if you agree to those statements, you have to agree that many trades work better than little trades. So now the question that we present is you have to agree if it's not one trade, then it's got to be the complete opposite of that, which is a lot of trades, right? Now, we're not going to define a lot of trades right now, but we agree at this point that if one or two or three trades or investments over the course of our life won't really get the results that we're looking for, then we also have to agree that it's got to be some number dramatically higher than that. We have to agree that it's got to be a series of trades or a sequence of trades or some number that we hit where we start to see some sort of compounding effect maybe or some expectancy effect play out. And I think most people would agree to that. So if you guys agree that it can't be one trade and two trades, you'll also agree it can't be a couple trades. It's got to be many trades. So if you agree to that, and these three questions now that we've, you know, kind of gone through, these rational, logical sequence questions, now the only real question we have to answer is how much sequencing risk do we have? So let me define this because I think this is so critical in our industry, and I don't hear a lot of people talk about it, and I think it's really important, especially with models that we're working, even models in just regular investing. And it's this idea that we have to define or basically move away from and protect ourselves from the only really thing that matters in this entire industry, and that is sequencing risk. So if I were to break down every possible risk that you have, everything can pretty much be mitigated except for sequencing risk. You can mitigate everything with position size and diversity and balance and trade count, but what you can't mitigate, and this is the tough part that I don't think a lot of people understand, you cannot mitigate, is sequencing risk. And sequencing risk is the risk that you run in any system, especially a high probability system like what we run at Option Alpha, is the risk that just a random sequence of trades end up being completely bad. And that sequencing risk you can't avoid. And it's basically these black swan events, right? Now you can mitigate some of that, but you can't completely, absolutely avoid it. Meaning you're at some point going to run into a series of trades or a sequence of trades that just don't work out. And so that is the only real risk that we have. And now that risk ends up knocking people out really early in the cycle because they run into maybe a small sequence, not even a large sequence, but a very small sequence of losing trades. And they look at that as, you know, the basis of what the future is going to be. And then they quit or they stop or they basically run out of capital. But the only real risk that we have in our models is sequencing risk. This risk that we're going to run into a string of potential trades that we have no control over the outcome of, right? And that, you know, end up being this series of 10, 15, 20, potentially 30 losing trades in a row. Now, the reality is that it's highly unlikely to happen, right? It's not the norm. We're not likely to see this, but it is a possibility. And so if it is a possibility, and if it's the one real big risk that we have to try to avoid over the course of trading, we've got to figure out a way to maneuver around it. And so today, what I want to talk about is four things that help you avoid blowing up your account and basically are the only four things that you can control that allow you to then avoid sequencing risk so that if For some instance, you come into a sequence of bad trades. Because remember, we can't control when that's going to happen. That's the risk we can't control. But we can control how we trade through that scenario or how we trade around that scenario. And so that's what I want to go through here today. So hopefully this makes sense, right? If we agree that we can't make one trade, if we agree that we can't just make two trades, and we agree that we've got to make a lot of trades, then the only real risk we have is that at some point during this making of a lot of trades that we're going to do, this high, you know, trade count, high frequency trading system, we're going to run into a string of really bad trades. So how do we take that string of bad trades and make sure that it doesn't blow up our account? That's really what happens, right? That's what everyone's worried about. In the stock market, we call this a bear market or a collapse, a crisis, a recession, a depression, right? That's what people are worried about. And in the stock market, people just end up trading, like they just end up taking it and they end up, you know, going down with the market and down with the ship, right? We don't want to do that. We want to try to figure out a way to move around this, not necessarily avoid it completely. It might sting, it might hurt for sure, but how do we stay alive? How do we keep the ship afloat when something like this happens so that we can keep moving forward? So there's four ways that we can do it. And the four ways are in order. They're in order, in my opinion, of importance. Now, I think you have to do all four. I think that because they're in order of importance doesn't mean that you can only do one or two or three and not all four. I think you have to do all four. So the first thing is you've got to keep your trade size down. So if we agree, and I get back to this so much, I feel like a broken record when I talk about this, but I know it's so important. If we agree that we have the risk of, say, let's say just 10 trades that are losers in a row, that it's not the likely outcome, but there's a chance it could happen, then the first thing we have to think about is trade size. Because if you are allocating 10% of your position to every trade and you allocate a full portfolio, 10% to every ticker, then you are effectively giving yourself an opportunity to completely blow up your account given one bad swoop of trades. One, that's it. We're not even talking about the other things that we're going to talk about, the two, three, and four of this list. We're talking about just you randomly pick four, you know, 10 tickers, 10% for each ticker. And in a really bad sequence of returns, you could end up seeing those 10 trades completely wipe out your account. So what I suggested Option Alpha, and I've always suggested this, this is not a new revelation for me. Go back 10 years ago when I started posting about this stuff. This is what I talked about, is keeping your trade size under 5%. And I say under 5% because if you have a small account, you might have to push that 5% threshold just to get the trade on, right? But if you've got a large account, you should be at 1, 2% for every trade or less. Most of the trades that I do on the membership, 1, 2% of my allocation in risk for each of those ticker symbols. So no one ticker symbol for me really ever represents more than 2-3% on the very high end of risk. So if that ticker symbol and that trade for the month goes completely sideways, absolutely full loser, cannot stop it, cannot adjust it, can't roll it, can't do anything, I'll lose 1-2% on that trade. And I'm totally okay with that. Because if I get a string of those, if I get 10 or 20 or 30 of those in a row, and I'm all on the same side of the market, which is what we'll talk about later, about being balanced. But if I'm all on the same side of the market and I get a string of 20 or 30 of those in a row, then I am going to definitely feel it, but I'm not going to be knocked out. I'm 100% going to keep my account open. I'll have enough cash still left over to stay alive. Now, the next thing that we're going to talk about here, and hopefully that made sense with the trade size, because it's really important. It's really the foundational element here. The next thing is balance. So the next thing that can really knock you off, if you agree that trade size can definitely help, the next logical sequence then is balance. And what I mean by balance is that using options gives us the wonderful opportunity to trade both directions or non-directionally with strategies. So now what we can do is we can, instead of being bullish on everything, which is what 99% of investors do, they just buy stocks and they're bullish and they have huge downside exposure. Instead of doing that, we can use option strategies to create a portfolio that profits within a range. And so we can take positions that are bullish, and we can take positions that are bearish, and we can take positions that are completely neutral within a range. And what you guys may not understand is that that ability, that flexibility that options allows in trading helps increase the likelihood that we stay alive during this sequencing risk of a bad string of trades that might come along. So again, if we can take care of our trade size, but our trade size and all of our positions are one-sided, meaning that let's say we do what I said earlier, and every position you enter is, you know, 1 to 2% max risk. But if all of those positions are bullish, you have a lot of exposure in case the market goes down, right? Now, you do really well if the market goes up, but what if it doesn't? What if this month we have a flash crash? What if this month we see Fed raise interest rates again and the market, you know, reacts unfavorably to that? Then you have all of your exposure on one side of the market. So point number two here is being balanced, using option strategies to your advantage to trade both sides of the market, meaning have bullish, have bearish, and have neutral positions. So that if the market does make a wild, ridiculous move in one direction, it only affects really half the portfolio. Now, it's again, not to say that's not going to hurt at all. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. It's definitely going to hurt. You definitely might see a drawdown, but having trades on both sides allows you to potentially reduce the impact of a major sequence of trades that move your positions lower to the downside, that, you know, a major event in the market that moves everything lower. If you've got a bunch of bearish trades that are profiting from a move lower, that's going to help. Now, again, it may not totally overcome the move down in the market, but it will absolutely help. And it will, again, keep you alive to keep trading for another day. So that's number two. So first one, again, was trade size. Number two is balance. Number three now is the next logical sequence, which is diversity of tickers. So you can call it regular diversification if you want to. That's normal to do. I call it diversity of tickers. But the idea here is that if we understand trade count and we understand we have to be balanced, then it makes no sense for us to balance our portfolio full of all oil-related stocks, right? That just doesn't make any logical sense. So the next step here, number three, is diversity of tickers, meaning have trades on both sides of the markets in a lot of different industries and sectors. Now, don't go crazy with this. I think a lot of people, you know, hear this and they think, oh, I've got to have, you know, 45 different tickers going. I mean, really, if you get around 10 to 15 different tickers on the high end, you'll probably do as much diversification as you probably need to be successful, right? I mean, there's a, I think a research report, I don't quote me on this, but they basically looked at diversification. They looked at how much added diversification you get from doing 100 stocks versus 500 stocks. And it's really not that much difference, right? So the idea here is that as you really diversify the number of, you know, things that you're trading, especially in the stocks, in the stock industry, then you get less and less of a benefit to doing that, right? So you could have 1,000 stocks, but it's not as good as having 5. And 100 basically gets you most of the way there of having 500. So in our industry, because we can pick and choose sectors very easily using ETFs or using index ETFs, then we can make that diversification done pretty quick in 10 to 15 different tickers. So what I like to do is I like to, you know, just go down the list and try to trade stuff in different areas. And there's no set rule here. So I always get questions like, well, how do I know which ones to diversify into? You know, I try to hit the major ones. So I'll talk about that here in a second. But then from there, I try to be opportunistic about, you know, filling it up with other tickers that have great trading opportunities. So for example, I might try to always have some sort of major market ETF, IWM, SPY, DIA, the Qs. I'll usually try to have bonds, which is TLT. I'll try to have some sort of emerging market or currency. So FXE, FXY, emerging markets could be EWW, EEM, EFA. I'll try to have maybe like a metal, right? So a gold or a silver, something like that, or a commodity, USO, XOP, OIH. I mean, try to hit some of the major broad categories that, you know, most global portfolios hit. Emerging markets, currency, bonds, stocks, right? Metals or commodities. I mean, you pick your poison, but ultimately you're trying to hit some of these major groups. And then what you do is you fill in the gaps with things that are, you know, really popular right now have high implied volatility. So that could be retail. So a while back, XRT was a really high implied volatility, you know, ticker. And so we trade a lot of XRT. Haven't traded it that much in a while. It could be XLV, which is healthcare, right? It could be SMH, which are semiconductors. So kind of pick and choose and fill in the gaps really with some of the things that are higher implied volatility on our list right now. And again, the idea is that you just have a basket that's not moving the same direction. Try to have diversity of tickers that allows you the ability to see one thing maybe move down against you, but that might mean the other thing is going to move up in your direction, right? Favorably for you. So that's number three here is just, it's not enough just to be balanced, because if you're balanced all around the oil market, that's not really helpful. So it's good to be balanced around the market in a diversity of tickers that move in different directions or have uncorrelated risk is really what we're looking for. So we've gone over so far, number one, which is trade size, number two, balance, number three, diversity of tickers, number four, and probably the most important one right here is trade count. So if we agree to that logic sequence that we have, that we talked about earlier, and the last one there was if you agree to, you know, the fact that not a lot of trades is going to, you know, you can't do a few trades, you have to do a lot of trades, then number four here is 100% trade count. And the only thing I'll say about trade count is that there's no magic threshold to cross necessarily. So a lot of people will ask and say, Kirk, how many trades do I need to make to be successful? And I can't say definitively, well, if you make 10 trades, you're going to be successful, because your first 10 trades could just be really good or could be really bad. I have no idea what the sequence of those trades are going to be. Even at 10, even at 100 trades, you still have some variance. I mean, you're still not really hitting the expectancy that you need to hit. It's not until you start getting up to, let's say, 500 to 1,000, 1,000 to 2,000 trades that you start really solidifying your system and your probabilities and your expected outcomes. That's where it really starts working, because after 1,000 trades, you know, you could have two, you know, a series of 20 trades that go against you, but they get averaged out through 1,000 trades. You could have a series of 40 trades that go against you. I mean, just completely bad, maybe a bad string of months. You never picked the right direction. You didn't balance. You didn't have diversity of tickers, but man, the trade count can average that out and account for that and get you back above water very quickly when you have a high trade count. So the only thing that really breaks sequence of returns, when we get back to talking about the real risk we have in markets, is sequence of returns. The only thing that breaks sequence of returns is trade count. And when you think about the only thing that would ever help you get to as high of a trade count as humanly possible, it's the three things that we just talked about earlier: trade size, balance, and diversity of tickers. That's it. If you can survive a bad event, then you are well on your way to being successful. In fact, what I've often said in webinars and with and coaching sessions with people is that the people who stay in business the longest, who survive the longest, end up being the most successful. So you look at people who have been doing this for decades and decades and decades, and they are super successful, and it's because they've stayed in business. So really the game here, the overarching game in this options world, is to stay alive, to never let one bad movement in a stock, one bad movement in an industry, one market downturn knock you out. And that comes back down to all those things that we talked about, because the longer you stay alive, the more you have the ability to keep the lights on and keep trading every day, the more successful you're going to come. It's just, or you're, the more successful you're going to become. It's just going to start to converge into this point at which you start hitting exactly what you're shooting for. And so it might take some time to get there. It's not going to happen overnight. I don't think we've ever promised that it's going to happen overnight. In fact, we talk about it not happening overnight, right? But you have to do these four things. You've got to keep your trade size down. You've got to balance your portfolio. You've got to have a diversity of tickers. You got to trade different things. You can't be a one-trick pony. And you've got to keep your trade count up over time, which means you have to keep trading. You know, one of the things that we learned in our profit matrix research, when we went back and talked about that on one of the previous episodes, and we did all of this backtesting, I mean, just millions and millions of trades, hundreds of thousands of variations. What we learned for sure, like some of the big threads that we found in that, is that when you looked at strategies that were super successful compared to those that were semi or not successful. The ones that were very successful had high trade count and lots of trade frequency, meaning lots of entries daily, weekly versus sequential or once a month. And it's just, it's clear. I mean, like the correlation is clear. When you trade more often, then you're going to be more successful because you start hitting those targets you're shooting for a lot quicker. But it also means that with more trades, you run the risk of sequencing. And sequencing risk when that, you know, the few or five trades or 10 trades in a row that become losers, God forbid 20 or 30 in a row, how do you survive that? I don't think that we've actually been through a market situation like that in a really long time. So I fear, which is why I'm doing this podcast, I fear that if we go through that in the near future and we have massive movements down in practically a lot of different areas, right, that many people are going to blow up their accounts, boom, very quickly. And I think it's because they're doing all of these things wrong. They're too big in position size. They're not balanced. They're just one-sided because the bullish trade has been the easy trade for the last couple of years. They have no diversity of tickers because they don't care to understand or learn different tickers. And they really don't care about trade count because why should I trade a lot when I can just trade once a month and, you know, let the market, you know, go up and I make a bunch of money, right? That stuff will come to an end. And it will come to an end in a very ugly and bloody way. And so what I'm trying to do is give you the power right now to understand the logic behind why that is going to fail at some point for somebody. And it's going to fail big time. You know, one of the great case studies in this, and I think if you go back and you read Reminiscence of a Stock Operator's Jesse Livermore's, I don't know, biography, autobiography, however you want to look at it, but you read about what he did, and probably one of the first technical chartists that was out there using technical analysis and price action, all this stuff. The guy made and lost millions of dollars multiple times. And he did it because he broke his own rules. He had very strict rules that he lays out in the book and everywhere you can hear, you know, probably quoted all over the place about, you know, rules that he has, but he never followed any of his rules. And so what ended up happening is that just as fast as he would make money, he would lose all of it because he'd use the same stuff that, you know, he knew wouldn't work, but he just broke all of his rules. This is a great example of what I know is going to happen in the future. I know a lot of people are going to lose money who are way too big in position size, overly directional in their trades, no balance, no diversity, nothing. They are going to lose everything that they gained just as fast, probably faster. All right, so I think we really hit the nail on the head today with this one. Hopefully this helps out. Like I said, and like always, please, if you think that this is helpful, please share this with your friends, your family, your coworkers. Definitely give us a review on iTunes. It's the best way to help get this into the hands of other traders because I think this is so critical. Like these things are so important. And again, if you follow the logic sequence that we laid out earlier, there's no end result other than what we talked about. There's no different way you could do it. You can't argue that bigger trade size is better, that being unbalanced is better, that having no diversity in tickers is better, that trading one time is better. Try to break any of those four things that I talked about, it does not work. So you have to do all four of these things. And hopefully that was made evidently clear in today's show.
And now our favorite part of the show, Trader Q&A, where we ask a question from one of our current members about options trading. Got a question you'd like to ask Kirk to answer live on the air? Just head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and hit the record button to leave a message. That's optionalpha.com/ask. And now here's today's question.
Hey, Kirk, this is Kevin from Washington, the police officer. Really enjoyed your first webinar. I thought it was informative and very insightful. Started studying options last year and just kind of strayed away from it. Got involved in stocks and I have lost a couple thousand dollars. So I've got about $25,000 in an IRA brokerage account that I transferred over from another employer. So I'm looking to get up to speed and take my time to learn on the fundamentals before I jump back into options trading. I do currently have two stocks that I know you said earlier that it's probably a better idea to just have your whole portfolio either in cash or at the 5% stock level, but I'm pretty bullish on Microsoft and, believe it or not, Rite Aid. I think Rite Aid could see a 50 to 75% return in 2018. So appreciate your time and consideration. I'm all about sweat equity, so I'm not going to skip any steps, and I will do exactly what you say because that's going to be the formula for success. All the best.
All right. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for submitting your question. First of all, thanks for serving as a police officer. So I appreciate that. So again, in reference to holding stocks like Rite Aid, you said, and Microsoft over the 5% level, I'm really not a fan of it. I mean, I'll just tell you honestly, unless you have some undeniable, like gut feeling that Microsoft is going to be amazing or Rite Aid is going to be amazing, we still have no idea what's coming, right? And what could derail them from their future success. So what I see right now, and I'll give you a case study in this, two examples of this is Blockbuster, right? Like everyone had Blockbuster. In fact, it was in many mutual funds for a long time. And overnight, Netflix came in and disrupted their business model. Nobody saw it coming. Blockbuster tanked. Now everyone's on the Netflix train, and not to say Netflix isn't great or doesn't have a good service or maybe a sound business model, but everyone's going to be shooting for Netflix, and there's going to be something at some point that disrupts Netflix and knocks it off its track. So when I see people who email me and they, you know, to use your example, Microsoft or Rite Aid, they use Netflix and they say, I've got 10% Netflix because I believe in it. Great. That's fine. You can do that if you want to, but just realize the risks that you're taking. Because if Netflix goes bad, or Microsoft or Rite Aid or whatever stock you want to invest in, if it goes bad, boom, you're lost 10%. But let's say you had a portfolio of things like that, right? Because that's never the case that if you invest in one stock and one stock only over 5%, it's usually that they have Facebook or Netflix or Snapchat or, you know, you name it, it doesn't really matter. But the risk that those random stocks then somehow lose a lot of value is still pretty high. And so for me, one, I wouldn't be invested in stocks, but two, if you were, I'd still keep that under the 5% threshold. I think it's probably a smarter decision to use up capital and slowly build or adjust positions over time than to go over that 5% threshold. So hopefully it helps out. As always, if you guys want to get your question answered here on the podcast or on Facebook Live, as we've been doing pretty much every single day here the last couple of weeks, please head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and click the big red button in the middle of the screen and leave me a private voicemail. Again, there's no software to download or install, and it's incredibly easy. So let's get in the closing bell segment.
Now, the closing bell. Find out which stocks we're looking at right now, trades we're making, and hear our game plan moving forward.
All right, so in today's closing bell segment, I want to talk about a new trade that we just set up in XLU. We are basically doing a new straddle in XLU. We just closed out of our straddle for August. That did well, made some good money for us in that position. So we're going to basically reset things here and trade a new straddle for XLU in September. Now, it's pretty interesting because XLU is a utilities ETF, not something you would typically think has high implied volatility, but it actually has had some pretty elevated implied volatility the last couple of months and has been a pretty good trading vehicle for us. We've, you know, done pretty well overall trading XLU. So we're just going to keep coming back to the hole here, the watering hole, and trading this again and staying consistent, staying mechanical, keeping our entries and trade count up. And we're selling the 53 strike straddle for September for a $218 credit. Now, this is a little bit bearish compared to where the stock is closing today. Stock's closed around 53.13, so it's just a very little bit bearish, but we're pretty neutral in this position. Again, taking in a credit of $2.18, so that moves our break-even point out $2 plus on either end, and hopefully takes advantage of some extra time decay and some volatility decay that might happen in XLU between now and expiration. Now, as always, if you're a subscriber to our Pro or Elite membership, you'll know that we send out in the trade comments the risk-defined alternative to this trade if you are trading in an IRA or retirement account. So we'll never leave you hanging. In our case, we're trading in a margin account, so we can do the straddle and we can handle the margin that comes with it. But again, if you're trading in an IRA or retirement account, we'll always let you know in the trade comments which options to purchase to create that risk-defined, in this case, iron butterfly position.
Thanks for listening to the Option Alpha podcast. If you liked what you heard, please drop by iTunes and leave a rating or comment. Plus, you can get everything. Free email updates for future shows, transcripts, video tutorials, case studies, and more. Just visit our website at optionalpha.com.
All right, so I truly hope you guys enjoyed today's show and got at least one thing out of it that you can apply right now to make you a smarter, more profitable trader and investor. As always, you can get additional resources, links mentioned in the show, and some related video training from today's show by going to optionalpha.com/139. Again, that's just the number 139, optionalpha.com/show139. And until next time, happy trading.